Did you know that originally there were 200 copies of the Declaration of Independence made, but only 26 known copies still exist today?
Welcome to the Lore of the South. Lore of the South.
Welcome back to Lore of the South with me, Kelly Cruz. How the heck are y'all doing? It's summertime, y'all, and I'm cooking. I caught myself Googling cool summer trips, and I don't mean Joe cool, I mean cool temp-wise. It's gonna be a long, hot summer in the South. In today's history-making news, it comes from ancient archaeology. An ancient burial was uncovered in Sweden, where the humerus had been repaired by using a copper plate. The bone showed healthy signs of regrowth, meaning that the patient survived for a good while after the surgery took place. It's been dated to between the 12 and 1500s. Can y'all imagine how painful that had to be? It's no wonder that most limbs would have just been lopped off. Today's story is dedicated to Pride Month and is about the founder of the U.S. Cavalry. So sit back and listen to episode 47, all about Casimir Pulaski. And a little warning here, I do talk about chromosomes and hint at bits and bobs. If that's not within your comfort zone, I do apologize, because you're going to miss out on one heck of a story. Casimir Mikhail Vladislav Viktor Pulaski was born March 6, 1745. To a noble family in Warsaw, Poland. He grew up in the royal courts there and learned at a very early age how to fight on horseback. He was a very slight build, only reaching somewhere between 5'1 and 5'4, and this made him a force to be reckoned with while on a horse. By the age of 22, the Russians had invaded his homeland. Casimir and his father joined the revolt against the Russian rule on February 28, 1768, and he was a Russian prisoner by June and was made to sign a document that said he would not take up arms against the Russians again. On June 28, he was released and immediately rejoined his Polish confederates. I want to interject here with the definition of the term confederate. In the U.S., we think of that as meaning the Southern forces. What the word truly means is a group that is in an alliance. So in the spring of 1771, he became an advisor to the Polish Confederates War Council. His contemporaries described him as spontaneous, more proud than ambitious, both brave and honest. His commanding officers described his personal appearance of that short and slightly built. In his personal manner, he'd often be seen pacing, spoke in a rapid fashion. Casimir, he has no interest in women or drinking. His greatest joy was to be found on the battlefield. In fact, he was so daring during battle that he had little regard for his own life or those around him, which in time resulted in the failure of more than one campaign. On May 31st, 1772, the Confederation was defeated. Pulaski was noted by some as one of its most famous and accomplished leaders, but others saw him as nothing more than a loose cannon who often disregarded orders and charged ahead into the face of oncoming battles. Casimir was then exiled to France. He could never return to his homeland again, where they now accused him of regicide and rebellion. Returning to Poland would be a death sentence. So in 1773, he tried to join the French army and failed. After failing to join the French, Pulaski went east and joined the Ottoman Empire in fighting the Russians on that front. He tried to implement the same kind of forces that he had led with his former Polish Confederation. This attempt also failed. The Russians won again, and Casimir barely escaped by boat back to France. He was now destitute and was a military man without an army. He was lost, and in 1775 found himself in debtor's prison. He remained in prison for about a year's time until his comrades could raise enough funds to pay off Casimir's debts and have him released. And as it so happened about this time, there was some trouble brewing in the colonies. And in the spring of 1777, Casimir Pulaski was recruited to fight for the colonists by none other than Benjamin Franklin and the Marquis de Lafayette. Franklin went so far as to write a letter of introduction for Pulaski. It read, "Count Pulaski of Poland, an officer famous throughout Europe for his bravery and conduct in defense of the liberties of his country against the three invading powers of Russia, Austria, and Prussia, may be highly useful to our service." Franklin went on to personally recommend Casimir to be accepted into the Continental Army's, at that time, non-existent cavalry as a volunteer. Pulaski arrived in Massachusetts on July 23, 1777, where he immediately wrote to Washington himself, "I came here where freedom is being defended, to serve it, and to live or die for it." By August, he was meeting face to face with George Washington, where he thrilled the commander-in-chief as well as his staff and troops with daring stunts on horseback. But at this time, Washington was unable to grant Pulaski a commission. Only the Continental Congress could do so. Pulaski would spend the next several months going back and forth between Philadelphia and wherever Washington happened to be camped, awaiting said commission. But waiting didn't keep Casimir from fighting. September 11, 1777, during the Battle of Brandywine, the Patriots were in retreat. Pulaski and about 30 of Washington's personal troops found out the British were planning to cut the line of retreat and kidnap Washington. Pulaski was then ordered to gather as many troops on horseback as he could and hold off the British attack, while the Patriots safely retreated. Pulaski and his mustered cavalry were able to hold the Redcoats at bay, save Washington, and maybe stave off an early defeat of the U.S. forces. Casimir's actions earned him the rank of Brigadier General of the Continental Army Cavalry. The commission was granted on September 15, 1777, and was presented by George Washington himself. Originally, these cavalry regiments were scattered amongst different infantry units and were mostly used for scouting expeditions. Casimir immediately set about gathering together a couple of hundred men and forming them into four regiments. He set about forming the first true Continental Cavalry, even writing the first book of regulations for his new troops. Only a day after his commission, while out on patrol, he spotted a massive force of Redcoats moving towards Philadelphia and the Army's current location. This would become known as the Battle of Germantown, and it took place on October 4th. It's when the British captured Philadelphia, the then capital city of the newly formed United States. Pulaski spent the winter of 1777 and 78 in Valley Forge, though he tried to convince command that they should continue to fight no matter the season. His requests were shot down. So Casimir then set his sights on Trenton, New Jersey, and reorganizing his cavalry. Through the end of February, he and his cavalry met with several regiments of opposing forces. In one such skirmish, Pulaski's horse was shot out from under him, and several of his cavalrymen were wounded. But Pulaski kept fighting, though he met with obstacles not only from the Redcoats, but from the Patriots as well. The men didn't like taking orders from a person who barely spoke English and was a foreigner to boot. He suggested forming a lancer unit, which was a cavalry that was equipped with lances that would lead charges against other soldiers on horseback, was declined. Pulaski resigned his post with General Wayne in New Jersey and returned to Washington in Valley Forge in March of 1778. He then went on to Yorktown, Virginia, where General Gates appointed Casimir to commander of the horse and reinstated him to his former rank of brigadier general. Gates also authorized the formation of the corps of 68 lancers and 200 light infantry. Pulaski mainly recruited out of the Baltimore area, and by August of 1778, what was to become known as Pulaski's Cavalry Legion. Henry Wadsworth Longfellow even wrote a poem dedicated to the forming of Pulaski's Legion. Casimir's Legion went on to fight in the affair of the Little Egg Harbor in New Jersey, where he suffered heavy losses. He was then ordered to fight the Iroquois, who had sided with the British. He was not happy with this assignment and nearly resigned again, threatening to return to Europe. So he was instead assigned to the Southern Campaign, headquartered in Charleston, South Carolina. He arrived in Charleston on May 8, 1779. And his legion was down to only 60 men. Not even sure if we can still call that a legion at this point. The officers on the southern front were tasked with retaking of Savannah, which had been in British hands since the past December. The British sent an advance troop across the Savannah River and into South Carolina, where Pulaski and his remaining cavalry met them head on. He lost even more men and was forced to retreat back to the safety of Charleston and its many cannon. Pulaski was next ordered to go down to Augusta, Georgia in preparation for the planned siege of Savannah. It was a combined force of American and French armies. There were also French ships anchored at the mouth of the Savannah River waiting for the retaking of the city, which would end the British's blockade of the city of Savannah. The French had tried to bombard the city in the hopes to weaken the British line, but their aim was off. And all they succeeded in doing was boring holes in the homes of the innocent citizens of Savannah. And the only casualties were that of women and children. So it seemed the siege was doomed from the start. On October 9, 1779, on or about where Martin Luther King Boulevard is today, Pulaski made his last charge up the Spring Hill Redoubt. The Continental Army had tried to take the Redcoats by surprise, that were betrayed by a deserter. And to top it off, they had also become lost in the foggy swamps in southern Georgia. And by the time they reached the British line, the British were waiting for them with reinforcements. They also had a small galley, a smaller sized ship, anchored in a creek with its broadside cannons facing where the American line would be. The British Navy used this prime spot to fire volley after volley of cannon fire straight down the American line, taking out hundreds of men and obliterating it. Pulaski, always the daring and sometimes careless hero, charged his horse up the Spring Hill Redoubt in an attempt to rally the troops. It was there that he was hit by a grape shot. In case you're not familiar with what grape shot is, it's a cluster of lead rounds packed together, and when fired, the shot spread out and caused widespread damage. Casimir was mortally wounded. He was taken aboard a merchant privateer ship, the Wasp, where it said he died 2 days later on October 11, 1779. What happened to Casimir Pulaski's body after that remained a mystery until 1996. One of the old stories was that he was buried at sea. Another said that he had a ceremonial burial back in Charleston and then, again, was buried at sea. And yet a third story, the captain of the Wasp, said Pulaski was taken off of his ship 2 days after being brought aboard. Captain Bullfinch then said Casimir was taken to a nearby plantation called the Greenwich, where he succumbed to his wounds and was buried there on the plantation grounds. Now we jump ahead to 1825, and the city of Savannah is planning a monument dedicated to General Pulaski, the hero who died trying to retake the city. The monument is located on Monterey Square, and its cornerstone was laid by the Marquis de Lafayette himself. Upon completion of the monument in 1853, the bones of who they thought to be the general were exhumed from a bluff that overlooked the Augustine Creek on the grounds of the Greenwich Plantation. They were then placed into his new monument on Monterey Square, famously where the Mercer Williams House is located from Midnight in the Garden of Good and Evil. But I digress. So the bones of this hero laid undisturbed until 1996, when permission was granted to verify if the remains were in fact those of General Kazimierz Pulaski. Upon reassembling the skeleton, it was immediately noted that it appeared to be that of a slight woman, due to the width of the pelvis and the delicate line of the brow. Upon further examination, different injuries that Kazimierz had suffered could be seen in the bones, like a broken hand, a scarred cheekbone, and the hip dysplasia that is seen in those who spend a lot of time on horseback. Samples were then sent to try to retrieve DNA from the remains, but were unsuccessful. So scientists were left with this conundrum of a female skeleton that greatly resembled the father of the U.S. cavalry. So at this point, there was much conjecture as to whether or not the general was actually a woman who had posed as a male for his 34 years of life. A decade passes and the Smithsonian takes over the investigation. Leaps and bounds have been made in DNA technology. Though Kazimierz had no descendants of his own, he did still have family in Poland. A great niece of his was exhumed so that a DNA comparison could be made. It was a match. This was in fact Kazimierz Pulaski. Now to find out what was going on with his bones. Smithsonian scientists had another theory, not that the general had been a woman posing as a man, but that maybe he had a rare genetic condition called congenital adrenal hyperplasia, which occurs in utero. When a fetus with female chromosomes is exposed to high levels of testosterone, this causes the baby to be born with, shall we say, ambiguous bits. This could explain the very feminine frame and build, but also the masculine appearance, with Kazimierz's receding hairline and his mustache. This assumption was confirmed after further DNA analysis was carried out. General Kazimierz Pulaski was intersexed. He had XXY chromosomes, which in the general population would be XY for male and XX for female. He lived in a time where he was left to find his own way, and thankfully he did, for Kazimierz Pulaski might have saved the revolution from an early defeat for we Americans. Posthumously, he received many, many awards and accolades. There are counties, towns, rivers, forts, highways, bridges, and schools named for him. There is even a Kazimierz Pulaski Day on October 11th. Cat Stevens wrote a song about him. And in 2009, President Barack Obama granted General Kazimierz Pulaski honorary U.S. citizenship, only the seventh person so honored. Side note, Kazimierz was at last laid to rest back in his tomb with full military honors in 2005. There he still rests under his monument on Monterey Square. So don't go looking for him in Pulaski Square. He's not there. That's kind of a local joke in Savannah. Every square has a name, and every square has a monument, but never do they match. Also, I wanted to add, Kazimierz did all of this fighting while battling malaria. If y'all think back to our episode about old-timey diseases, dude was pretty hardcore. I mean, malaria could be pretty serious, and it's ongoing. You did not and you do not get rid of it. Hope y'all enjoyed this tale of the founder of our cavalry and hero of the American Revolution. It just goes to show you that there is always more than meets the eye, and we should all be judged on who we are and not what we are, be it our race, place of birth, sex, or orientation. And I'll step off my soapbox and give y'all a recommendation. How about the podcast Science Versus? They cover some diverse topics, so you can pick and choose what you want to listen to. Y'all know I always like learning things, so I enjoy it. I also enjoy the host Wendy's Australian accent. She's a trip. I mentioned last time that we started a Patreon. It starts at the $5 level, but I'm going to add a $3 level as well. Once I have this podcast all ready for your ears, I should have the first Patreon episode up. So check out the Patreon link in the show notes and see what kind of bonuses you'll be eligible for by signing up. You'll also be helping us a ton. We could really use some updated equipment that would allow us to do interviews and record on location. So give it a look and a thought, and if you just want to sign up for 1 month and then cancel it, shoot, go ahead. Follow us on Facebook and Instagram for pictures related to each podcast. I also post updates there. You can also find us on YouTube and now on TikTok. I've had a couple more emails with show ideas, and y'all will be hearing those in the near future, along with a shout out to the ones who recommended them. So keep an ear out for your name and a show coming soon. If you'd like to get in touch as well, y'all can email us at loreofthesouth@gmail.com. And with that, we'll talk to y'all later on Lore of the South.